The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Valar Morghulis, and welcome to Making the Eight. I am your host, Jackie Jennings, and this podcast is all about getting you up to speed for a Game of Thrones Season 8. I am recapping one season per episode and then chatting about it with a friend to get their take on all the events of that season. And today, we're on Season 7, the penultimate season ever. Later in the show, I'm going to be joined by Sal Gentile, who is a supervising writer at Late Night with Seth Meyers. And for today, he is also my hand. We're going to be chatting about all our favorite moments from the season. But first, we have to recap it. We start in King's Landing. So this season is all about the looming wars and who is going to fight for which side. Cersei reigns as queen in the capital, but with serious threats from all sides, they need allies. So, when Euron Greyjoy, who is the usurping uncle of Theon and Yara, presents himself as a potential friend, Cersei welcomes him in her own Cersei way, so very coldly and rudely. She does promise to marry him and cement an alliance if he can do something to prove his loyalty. So, good old Uncle Euron decides that the perfect way to do that is with a gift. Ladies love gifts. He takes his fleet and ambushes his niece and nephew at sea. Euron captures Yara as well as Ilaria Sand and one of the Sand Snakes, the other two are killed, who were traveling with them. Theon escapes, but Ilaria, Yara, and Tiny, the surviving Sand Snake, are dragged back to the capital and Cersei. We end the season not knowing quite where Yara winds up, but Ilaria and Tiny are locked in a dungeon to be tortured in payment for Myrcella's murder. Remember, they're the ones who killed Cersei's daughter, and a Lannister always pays her debts and makes sure that she gets paid too. Things are not looking good for the Sands. Cersei isn't content with just Euron Greyjoy as an ally. She meets with Randall Tarly, father of Sam and powerful southern lord. She proposes that since House Tyrell is in shambles, the whole future of the house is dead except for Lady Olenna, the Tarlys should fight for the real queen, Cersei, and she'll make them wardens of the south. Cersei also sweet-talks the Iron Bank into backing her. She's Tywin's daughter. She's a beacon of stable leadership, and banks love stability. So while Cersei is amassing allies and also alienating Jaime with her ever more diabolical plots, the rest of the kingdom is turning their sights north and preparing for the greatest war of all, the war against the White Walkers. But first, before we go north, we travel to Dragonstone. When Season 7 begins, Dany makes landfall at her ancestral home, finally in Westeros, with her armies, her dragons, and her companions. But she's going to need more friends, specifically Westerosi friends. So she summons Jon Snow, the newly minted King in the North, to bend the knee and swear fealty to her. Jon goes to Dragonstone, not to bend the knee, but to try and convince Dany that the real war isn't with the Lannisters, it's with the dead. Dany won't form an alliance until Jon bends the knee, and Jon won't do that, but she does agree to let him mine the Dragonglass that Sam reveals is buried all over Dragonstone. Dragonglass is the one thing that can kill a White Walker, and Jon knows they're going to need a whole lot of it when that army gets south. A mutual respect, if not crush, develops between the two of them. Then Dany learns that two of her allies, Yara and Ilaria, were defeated at sea, and she decides she's gotta get in the fight herself. She's sitting on three dragons. Let's go. Tyrion and Jon warn her not to use the dragons to level cities. That's not going to go well. So she doesn't do that, but she does attack the caravan of Lannister soldiers who are bringing plundered gold from Highgarden. We'll get to that. And for the first time, we get to see Dany's dragons in battle. We've seen them roast individual people. We've seen them, I guess in Astrapor, roast more than individual people. But this is the first time we see dragons versus army. And so does the rest of the world. After the battle, Dany demands the remaining Lannister men bow to her or die. And most of them do, because they just saw what that dragon can do, and it's not a good way to go. Randall Tarly and his younger son Dickon refused, so Dany roasts them alive with Drogon, her dragon. And Tyrion is scared because using dragons and such seemingly merciless black and white terms is starting to feel a lot to him like the behavior of her father, the Mad King, who burned his enemies alive too. So Tyrion's a little nervous about where Dany's heading. Jon gets a letter from the Wall that says the White Walkers, are approaching, and he knows he's got to do something big. Nobody is listening to him. Nobody believes him. He's got to prove to everyone in the South that the White Walkers are real. He hatches a plan to take a raiding party, head north, capture a White Walker, and bring it south to show Cersei and everyone that they need to pause their wars in order to fight the dead. It's an insane plan. He's joined by a very motley crew. The timeline here gets very quick. Lots of people who are second-tier characters up until this point join Jon on his quest north. Everything goes haywire, and they have to be bailed out by Dany, who loses a dragon in the fighting that follows against the White Walkers. The dragon is turned into an ice dragon by the Night King, and at the very end of the season is used to bring down the Wall and allow the army of the dead to pass through. Also notable is that on the way home from this mission gone to shit, Jon and Dany have sex, which is insane for a lot of reasons, but the A number one is, remember, he's actually Rhaegar Targaryen's son. Rhaegar is Dany's brother, so they are aunt and nephew. They don't know it, but they are. Moving on. In the field of battle, we mentioned earlier that Jaime's army has plundered Highgarden. How did that happen? So, Tyrion, who's now an advisor to Dany, counseled her to send the Unsullied to strike at the seat of the Lannister power and all their forces at the ancestral Lannister home, Casterly Rock. They do, but when they arrive, they find the rock is pretty much unguarded. And that's because Jaime has smartly decided to cede the rock to Dany while opting to turn his forces toward Highgarden. So with one fell swoop, Jaime defeats a powerful enemy who are now really allies thanks to the Tarlys, gets access to all their grain and gold, which is stuff you need when you're planning a war. So Jaime essentially outmaneuvers Tyrion, and it's a reminder to everyone that not only is Jaime a great individual fighter, he's trained as a general by Tywin Lannister, who is one of the greatest generals in Westeros before he was killed on a toilet. So all that loot that's coming back from Highgarden, all that gold, all that grain, that's what Dany attacks. So she somewhat lessens their spoils, but it doesn't matter. Highgarden is laid low, and the Tyrells as a house are effectively ended. In the attack on Highgarden, Jaime confronts Lady Olenna, the matriarch of the Tyrell family, and, it's worth saying, a fan favorite. He informs her that Cersei wanted her tortured and painfully killed, but Jaime talked her down to a painless poison for a death. Olenna takes the poison and, before she dies, reveals to Jaime that it was in fact her that organized Joffrey's murder way back when. With what are presumably her last words, Olenna asks Jaime to tell Cersei it was her. She wants Cersei to know that she killed her son. Damn. Olenna is a stone-cold bee, to the last, a true hero, but now she's gone. At the Citadel, Sam is training to be a maester, and he does two really important things. He cures Dora of his grayscale, and he lets John know that there's tons of dragonglass on Dragonstone. This discovery is what spurs John to meet Dany. He eventually leaves the very stuffy and restrictive Citadel and makes his way to Winterfell, where he meets Bran, who's also returning from sort of a freaky college experience in a tree. They've both been learning. Sam at the actual university, and Bran from a man who's tangled up in a tree. Bran reveals Jon Snow's true parentage to Sam, and then, in a dusty old book, Sam finds evidence that Rhaegar and Lyanna were in fact legally married when Jon was born, making Jon a true-born heir to the throne. So not only is he actually a Targaryen, he's not and never has been a bastard, which is an epithet that everyone has leveled at him throughout this entire show, something that has probably impacted his self-esteem pretty badly and has never been true. And also that his real given Targaryen name was Aegon. Obviously, Ned couldn't run around calling him Aegon. That's a very Targaryen name, so he called him Jon. But that's Jon's real name, Aegon Targaryen. Back in King's Landing, we bounce back for the season finale. So we have all these threads that have been going on. Jon and his raiding party, though, have successfully brought a wight back from the north and gotten every pissed off faction in the kingdom to pause their hostilities long enough to look at it. So, a massive meeting of basically every major character still alive is organized, except for Sansa, Arya, and that whole Winterfell crew, who we'll get to. Jon and Dany present the creature to Cersei. Cersei agrees that she will fight for the living, only to reveal later to Jaime that she plans to betray all those people too. Jaime has seen enough. He is shaken to the core by the wight, by Dany's dragons, and how wildly destructive they are and how incredibly unmatched their armies are. And Cersei's apparent break from reality. He leaves the capital, vowing to keep his pledge to fight for the living. But first, Cersei reveals to him that she's miraculously pregnant, which is weird because she's in her 40s, and it's not entirely clear how she's pregnant. Presumably it's Jaime's, but it's worth noting that her freaky meister, Qyburn, who we haven't talked much about, but is a giant, kind of eugenics-obsessed weirdo who's been skulking around for the past few seasons. But Jaime believes her, and he wants to fight for whatever might be left of their family. So the season ends with Jaime and Cersei parting, not on good terms. Cersei vowing to fight for the living in public, but knowing she's going to betray everybody in the end, and pregnant with what I assume is some kind of unnatural abomination, courtesy of Qyburn. Our last plotline in Winterfell, a lot is going on. So early in the season, Jon departs for Dragonstone and leaves Sansa, Lady of Winterfell, and in charge. The only issue with that is that Littlefinger is still hanging around, and for good reason. It was his Knights of the Vale that won the Battle of the Bastards on behalf of Sansa. Also around, Arya. She's back from Braavos. Before she goes home, her first stop was at Walder Frey's house. Remember the Freys? The hosts of the Red Wedding who betrayed and murdered her brother and mother? Well, newly minted faceless chick Arya kills all the Freys in a really insane but very satisfying season premiere. She then bounces up to Winterfell. Jon's already gone, and Sansa's in charge. Tension builds between the two of them. Arya thinks that Sansa is trying to undermine Jon and amass power and loyalty in the North for herself. These suspicions are stoked by the ever-meddling Littlefinger, who seems to want Sansa for himself, until, in a glorious twist, it's revealed that the Stark sisters and Bran, who is now home, are actually very much allied against Littlefinger. Sansa springs a surprise trial on him for all his, you know, million crimes against the Stark family, and Arya quickly execute him, Because, as Sansa says, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives. The Stark kids are back together, and what a pack they are. They're loyal to each other, and it looks like nobody is going to be able to break that bond, we hope. So, we end season 7 with Jon and Dany allied, and also naked friends. Jon pledges his loyalty to Dany, King of the North, bending the knee. He's only been King of the North for what, like 2 weeks before he's bending the knee, but he does. Littlefinger, one of the master puppeteers throughout the entire show, is now dead. Most of the kingdom seems determined to fight the real enemy, which is the Army of the Dead heading south through the now destroyed wall. Of course, pregnant Cersei is an exception to that. We'll see how it goes. And that's it. Season 7. You're almost officially completely caught up. First, Sal and I have to chat all about it so you can get that fan feedback. That's going to happen after the break, so stick around.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, so season 7.
Yeah.
That's the last season we have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's fair to say, I said it earlier in the recap, that this season moves more than any other season at a pace that feels, it's fast, but it's also inconsistent.
Yes.
It's people get places very speedily.
There are basically scenes where people are taking like elevators from like... From
yeah.
like Westeros to like Dragonstone.
Yeah, they're using like the people mover at the airport.
Yeah. Time definitely feels like it changed somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Season 7 compared to previous seasons feels like the scene in Interstellar where they go down to the planet that's close to the black hole. And
oh my
for
God.
Them, time moves very slowly and then they come back and everyone else is like 20 years older. Season 7 is like what it's like to be closer to the black hole.
Yeah.
And then outside of that, everyone else has aged 20 years.
Yeah. Is that the same planet where the wave goes really?
Yeah, that's the giant wave.
That scares me so badly.
Yeah.
The
terrifying.
Idea, that's like, it is, I think, like nightmares
mm-hmm.
that I've had.
Yeah.
Okay. So season 7 moves kind of in a funky way. We've done, but on.
Aren't there literally scenes where somebody like gets on a boat? And then
the next scene.
There's like a scene in between, and then like the scene after that as they step off the boat somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's like I'm going to
and then they're there.
I'm going to Dragonstone, and then it's like he steps off the boat. He's like, "Hey, here I am at Dragonstone."
There are no real new characters.
Yeah,
not really. There are, however, characters who are back on the board,
mm-hmm.
and the most brief of these is Walder Frey.
Yes.
He is back
mm-hmm.
only to be served at the hand of Arya Stark a pie that has his sons baked in
it. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
It's awesome.
She did it Cartman style.
I don't know. What does that mean?
So there is an episode of South Park.
Yeah.
I'm not remembering the details very well, so I'm going to look it up right now just to get the Wikipedia summary. Because there is an episode of South Park where Cartman feeds... this kid named Scott Tenorman, his parents.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And the episode I'm pretty sure is called Scott Tenorman Must Die.
Yes.
I don't remember exactly what the details of the episode are, but I just remember thinking that Arya was pulling a Cartman. Scott Tenorman Must Die is the fourth episode of the fifth season of South Park. In the episode Ninth Grader, Scott Tenorman makes Cartman believe that buying pubic hair from him will make Cartman reach puberty. Realizing that he had been tricked, an angry Cartman arranges for Scott's parents to be murdered and feeds them to him.
It's so insane that that show mm-hmm. continued for like 20 years after that.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, for
for most shows, you'd be like, that's got, like, for this show, you're like, it's got to be the end.
And that episode was in 2001. And when did season seven come out?
So 2017, I guess, the end.
So they presaged the Arya murder of Walder Frey's sons by 16 years.
I'm baking people into foods, because that is also, that happens in the film Fried Green Tomatoes, where they put him, they put a guy in a bolognese sauce.
They do?
Yeah. That's plot line in someone's, or is it Steel Magnolias or Fried Green Tomatoes? I forget. It's one of those like mid-90s kind of chick flicks.
Total side note, but I totally forgot. It's just a funny fact. English rock band Radiohead guest star in this episode as themselves. I forget exactly how they're involved, but Radiohead are in the episode where Cartman makes Scott Tenorman eat his parents.
The plot line is that Tom York is watching and he's like, I have an idea, comma, please.
Yeah, yeah. That's where he writes the episode. That's where he writes that song.
Yeah. That's very funny. And also a listicle I'd read, the definitive instances of people being fed family members.
Yeah, yeah.
Without their knowledge.
Or parallels between Game of Thrones and South Park. Yeah. Because there's got to be others.
There have to be. There's so many episodes of South Park.
Yeah.
That they're just by default have to be. Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Hanky the Christmas Poo is, he's essentially...
He hatches dragons.
Yeah, yeah. He's like a dragon egg or something.
Yeah, he's a little dragon egg.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Walder Frey gets served his kids in a pie and then murdered by Arya along with, and then wearing his face, Arya kills all of the people who were at the Red Wedding, or all of the men who helped kill mass murders.
While we're talking about this, could you briefly explain for me,
maybe
as a layman, as a lay person, how the magic of the faces works?
Oh, I don't think George R. R. Martin could explain the magic of how the faces works.
Okay.
So we'll jump around a little bit. Walder Frey is dead. There's a few other characters who pop back up in crazy ways. If we get to them, great. If not, who cares? But one of the biggest moments of this season is Littlefinger dies.
Mm-hmm.
Littlefinger is at Winterfell because he helped win the Battle of the Bastards. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like skulking around after Sansa. Mm-hmm. Trying to drive a wedge between Sansa and Arya.
Right.
And
you think maybe for a while that he's succeeding.
That it's working. Yeah. I think it's controversial. It's one of my favorite scenes. I think it's satisfying. Sansa basically holds like a very brief trial for him and Arya executes him.
Why is it controversial?
Well, I think a lot of people felt, and I felt this way too, that there wasn't enough work done to show that Arya and Sansa were, there was so much work done throughout the season to show that they were,
so they're back on the same page, that they were allies again.
Yeah. Like the show does such a good job of showing
right. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people felt in this case that it was just a convenient twist.
Right. Well, that is the thing about, you were saying about the chess pieces earlier, but it is true that like, that is one of the hallmarks of the show, which is that you can see the chess pieces, the chess moves. And so that is definitely the case. And even if you don't see them in real time, you can at least get the sense that people are making chess moves. And then after the fact, you can see the moves that they made.
One of my favorite plots that I contrast it to is way back in, I think it was season three, when Daenerys is first buying the Unsullied, and the entire plot line of the slave master in Astapor speaking Valyrian and like really insulting Daenerys, and Missandei translating it kindly. And at the very end, you find out that Daenerys the whole time spoke the language. When you rewatch it, it's obvious and satisfying because she's reacting and it's clear that she understands it in her explanation of like, of course I speak Valyrian. Like my family's from Valyria. This feels like, what?
Yeah.
You guys are on the same team?
Yeah.
And I think when you rewatch it, it doesn't reward that.
But that also might be another case of time just moving so quickly that like things just need to happen now. So they don't have enough time for the pieces to play out.
They just don't. Yeah.
Like they just need to have, like a rook just needs to move like 10 spaces.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, it doesn't matter how it got there. Like it's there now. And,
yeah. And the scene is great. It's satisfying. It's really well acted.
Yeah. It's true. It's a great scene.
Yeah, it's a great scene. But Littlefinger dies. But what you were referencing is a fan theory that Littlefinger has actually paid and I might not get this exactly right, but that he paid a faceless man to wear his face.
And that Littlefinger is still alive.
There's a similar theory about Ned. The place that falls apart is that there are parts in the show where they show Jaqen physically slicing off a face. So like, you're not, and like the Hall of Faces is a hall of physical faces.
Right.
So the idea that a living person could give their face to another living person,
That would really break the magic, the rules totally.
Right.
Unless there's something we don't know about that then feels earned. I don't really know what that would be.
Like, George R. R. Martin has also talked about how he thinks magic should be used with a very light hand in fantasy. That like magic should take a backseat to world building and character building and only be like part of the mythos.
Well, that's true because Melisandre, like, she has used magic, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But like, she can't do everything. Like, she's wrong often too. So that is a good example of like when she births the smoke demon,
the smoke baby.
There is maybe a question of, well, can she just always do this? Like, if they just want to murder people all the time, like if there's just anybody you want to murder. But then they explain later, and I forget exactly why. Like it's just you can't do it that often.
She just sort of tells Stannis like, you're too weak. Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't have enough smoke.
So, is that what she says?
Smoke sperm, I guess. He asks her at one point, he's like, just give me another baby. And she's like, I can't, you don't have enough power or something like that.
But clearly she was wrong.
Yeah.
When they burned Shireen.
Yeah. Poor little.
Yeah.
I fast forward through that. I can't. I didn't even talk about it on this. I can't. It makes me physically sick. But it makes me sick. Like, I hate that scene. It's really well done. It's truly horrifying.
Yeah.
I think they do a good job of treating magic the way religion, I mean, they are religions. It's not just magic. The magic stems for the most part from a religion, which when it's mediated by people the way it is in the show, like Melisandre, can be wrong and messed up, and they make mistakes. So,
yeah.
So let's jump back. Well, we could just like briefly give one of my favorite, not characters, but institutions is the Iron Bank. They're back. I like it because I just think it's a cool piece of world building.
You're just a fan of monetary policy.
I'm a fan of monetary policy. I love the economics of the fantasy world.
You just want to know, like, are they accidentally encouraging inflation by increasing the money supply?
We don't know. We don't know what currency. I think it's cool.
You're a big Federal Reserve fan.
Look, I'm a bank head.
Yeah, and you're a bank freak.
I'm a real bank freak.
Yeah.
No one knows, but I wear a Deutsche Bank jumpsuit when I record
you're sponsored by Deutsche Bank, which
one of the few non-athletes
is a sister institution of the Iron Bank.
The Iron Bank. Yeah. I mean, kind of.
If you have an Iron Bank credit card, you can take out money from Deutsche Bank.
Yeah,
without a fee.
Yeah, it's very heavy. It's cool. Mm-hmm. I like it because I think it's...
I do think that would be so funny if in the world of Game of Thrones, out of nowhere, somebody did something like very quickly that was like super modern and then nobody commented on it. Like if they were just talking about like paying for more like mercenaries or something, and then just like Cersei really quickly just took out an Iron Bank credit card and swiped it away and then no one talks about it.
Yeah.
Somebody did you talk about this on the podcast from the first season, how there is apparently somebody in the background of a shot who just looks like he's wearing like normal clothing.
That's so funny.
I forget
in the pilot it is. We did talk about how
the pilot, but I'm not sure.
The pilot is like a miracle that it exists because it was so notoriously horrible. The first one they shot.
The very first one.
Yeah.
Right.
They
gave it so much money.
So much. I mean, we can't talk. The reason I like the Iron Bank so much is that as a fan of fantasy, money and economics never get talked. It just the whoever is the king has infinite money and people are just rich and they're endowed with the characteristic of being rich. And it doesn't, you don't care how or what it's from, but I think one of the things that sets Game of Thrones apart is stuff like the Iron Bank. People can appeal to them and you have to make your case, and stuff like Tywin Lannister saying Casterly Rock doesn't have gold anymore. We don't have any more money. Mm-hmm. We're on credit here, people.
Like,
that feels, I mean, I just think of families growing up who were like super rich, you know, or had like the biggest house on the block, but they didn't actually have any. You would hear rumors where it's like, they don't have any money. Like,
sure, totally. There is a truthfulness in how illusory people's sort of projections of wealth are.
Wealth and power.
Which is, it is true. I can't think of, is there money in Star Wars? There's money in Star Wars, I guess.
Not really. It doesn't. No one asks, like, who's funding the rebellion?
Yeah.
Who?
Like, well, isn't that kind of addressed in Solo or something like that, where they're like, oh.
Kind of.
Yeah, I don't know. And there's like arms trade. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like you just, there's a black market and it's coming from somewhere. And like there's a junk heap on Jakku and they, whatever. But like, really directly dealing with it and the consequences of paying back, not paying back. It's cool. Anyway.
But so you like the idea, which I think is very interesting, that there's economics in Game of Thrones.
There's economics and there's consequences. And I like the, I think it feels very adult, which sometimes I think genre can fall short on. It feels very adult and sophisticated to have this, like an economic force. It's not political. I mean, it is. Money's political. It's not brute force. It's not magic. It's not religion. It's money. And it's the most powerful force moving our world. But it's never, there's no great analog for it in genre, but in the Iron Bank there is.
Right.
And I think it's.
Is it just gold?
I don't know that
they. Do they ever spell out what it is?
Well, I mean, they deal in all different. The Lannisters, it's gold. That's their wealth. It's like they mine gold at Casterly Rock. The Iron Bank is just money and cash in whatever currency, because they lend to Westeros and they lend to Braavos, and I know they're different currencies, but I don't remember. At the beginning of one of the books, they spell it out.
Right. And they just have like stacks of $100 bills.
And they got hundreds. It's like,
it's the American
it's
dollar.
It's the Euro.
They have
it's the IMF. The bank, the Iron Bank is,
Right, yeah.
I can't imagine anyone else cares about the Iron Bank as much as.
I think it's great that you love the Iron Bank.
I love it. Yeah. I think it's one of those things that sets the show apart from, you know, Magic and Dragons. It's like the money.
Yeah.
Who thinks about that? Okay. But we'll talk about, we'll wrap it all up in one. We'll put it all under the heading of dragons.
Okay.
The dragons factor in this season more than they ever have.
Right.
And it starts with the journey north. So Jon Snow rallies a bunch of people to go north of the wall, get a white, and convince Cersei that these things are real and that she needs to stop her petty bullshit and fight what's really coming. This is where the time jump thing gets really crazy. Like the journey
to get a white walker.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wait, do people just say to white?
Well, a white, like W-I-G-H-T.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
It's confusing. Okay. Like a white.
Yeah.
Not quite a white.
Right.
The brogue makes all the difference. So this is where things get crazy, where like Gendry can run from wherever they are back to Castle Black. And this is where we were saying like all these characters who are back. Gendry's back.
Yes.
Beric Dondarrion is back. Thoros of Myr is back. They all unite.
Totally. It's like
somehow.
It's like the last episode of Seinfeld where everyone just comes back. It's like everyone just marches into the courtroom.
It is. And the conversations that they have along the way are
Soup Nazi's back.
Soup Nazi's back, baby. Yeah. And guess what? He's got a sword that's on fire.
Yeah. George Steinbrenner is back.
It is like, I think that they also are clearly relishing putting these pairings of characters together and seeing them each, for lack of a better expression, play their character games together. Like, Tormund is going to talk about how hot he thinks Brienne is, and the Hound is going to be like, you know her, you know, like
totally. Yes, there's a lot of like crossover potential. And,
So that happens.
It's like in a comic book where you know it's like when the Justice League is first getting together and Batman's like, so what's your deal? And the Flash is like, I can run really fast. And Batman's like, oh, well, that sucks. And then he does it, and he's like, okay, you're on the team.
You're
on
the team, kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is that moment. It is like that in like Civil War, like the Avenger, like seeing Spider-Man, like, whoa, kid, that's pretty cool. Like, hey, Mr. Stark, you know, that kind of thing.
It is. It's like Ocean's 11. There's like one
This is a genre. What is this?
It's definitely a thing.
The getting the team together.
Yeah, the getting the team together thing. It's like, it is. It's like a heist movie, essentially, mm-hmm. is that plot line. Like they all they need is one, is the guy in the van who's hacking something.
Yeah.
Hacking the mainframe.
Like, maybe that's Bran?
Maybe. He's kind of the hacker.
Bran's plugging himself into the tree.
Bran is plugged into the tree, hacking the mainframe. Yeah.
Oh my God, the weirwood trees are the mainframe and Bran's hacking.
Yeah.
Ooh, actually, I like this.
Yeah.
So they're all north of the wall. I put it under the heading of dragons because one of the biggest, I think, like, holy shit moments for fans, and it was something people had predicted, is Dany has to come bail them all out. The plan goes really badly. Dany bails them out. And in her bailing them out, she loses a dragon to the Night King. He turns him into an ice dragon who now breathes ice and not fire.
Right.
People have speculated that this means the Night King is a Targaryen. How can he ride a dragon? He must be an ancient Targaryen.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. That's big. The other, we just don't have time to talk about it, but the other big, like, dragon.
What if the Night King just turned out to be, like, cool as hell? What if he was just, like, riding in, and he lands, and he's got, like, a six-pack in his hand. And he's
like, what's up, Westeros?
Yeah, and everyone's like, this guy's awesome.
The Night King reveals, he's like, by day, I'm the Night King. By night, I'm a damn DJ.
And he's like, you know what? I'm going to install a pool in the backyard of Westeros, of the King's Landing.
Yeah.
And we're all going to have pool parties. Yeah. And
guess what? If you guys don't like it, vote me out of office. That's right. Democracy reigns. He's a progressive.
Yeah.
He might be. I don't think any ending is off the table.
And he's just smoking weed. And he's like, guys, come on. Everyone's been.
You know what the problem is with you people? You're all too uptight.
It turns into like an 80s stoner comedy.
Relax. Yeah. The last, like, dragon under the heading, while we're in the outline under the heading of dragon, is we have to talk about the loot train battle, only because I think it's, well, I guess I'll back up. Like, this season more than any other, I think, satisfies fans.
Yeah.
It feels like it is consciously satisfying. Like, that's the whole thing with characters coming together and having these funny conversations, you know.
That's true.
And funny by Game of Thrones standards, where it's still they're going to hunt an army of the dead.
Right.
And I think the loot train battle is one. So this is when Daenerys, she takes Tyrion's advice to an extent and is not going to use her dragons to level King's Landing. But she's like, I got to get in the fight. I can't sit here with three dragons and do nothing. So she torches the loot train that's coming from Highgard into King's Landing. Jaime sees it, almost dies. But it's I think the first time, not only is it the first time we get to see the dragons fight, really in battle fight.
Yeah.
We also get to see Jaime Lannister scared for the first time.
Yeah.
Where he's like,
that's cool.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Where he sees how serious it is.
Yes. Where he basically goes back to Cersei and is like, we're going to lose. Yeah. We can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, she could torch if she wanted to.
And it turns out in this whole thing, also, we get to see Qyburn's weird dragon arrow thing, which is
Qyburn
great.
Is a person I haven't talked about much because
Qyburn is the best.
I know.
Qyburn is so funny. He's
Qyburn,
this,
yeah.
Qyburn is this whole, just, it's so funny. He's legitimately a cool character, but he's also it's funny to have this creepy little weirdo hanging around doing all these experiments and stuff.
Yes. He's just a weird freak.
And he's got his little crowd of children that he makes do things. And they do stuff, and he's working on dead bodies, and, you know, it's just like he disappears into his lab for a while, and then he comes back, and he's like, I've turned in the mountain into a zombie.
I've defeated death.
And I have, and it's also, it's like, he's like, do you want to see something I'm working on? And she's like, yeah, and he's like, here's a giant arrow that kills dragons. Mm-hmm. It's like,
I figured it out.
Yeah, I think I have a solution. Qyburn is awesome. I wish Qyburn got more attention.
Wish Qyburn got more play on this podcast.
Yeah, Qyburn should totally get more play.
I know.
But the thing about that is, again, this goes back to time moving quickly. He doesn't, like, teach anybody how to use the arrow.
No.
It just shows up, and then what's his face?
Bronn. Yeah.
Just, like, jumps on and is like, let's rock and roll.
Let's take this baby
and
out for a spin.
He's great at it.
Yeah, and he nails the dragon.
He is awesome.
He's really good at it.
Yeah. Like, when he does that, he should realize, like, this should be my career, is shooting this giant thing.
Yeah.
It's like Rookie of the Year when he picks up a ball and throws like 95 miles an hour. He's like, I should be a professional. I'm 12. Yeah. I'm only 12, but I should be a professional baseball player.
I should be a damn professional dragon killer.
Yeah, Bron is like awesome. He takes two shots and nails a dragon.
It's so
high in the sky.
There's also a lot of... So this tool that Qyburn invents to kill the dragons is just a giant crossbow. It's like he looked at a crossbow and went, what if we just made that bigger?
Yeah, it's true.
What if he made a big crossbow? He made a big crossbow. He also, my main quibble with that is he makes it out of wood, which is the one thing that dragons can for sure wreck.
Is it made out of wood?
It's made out of wood.
Oh, so they just have to burn it down.
He just torches it. Oh. Yeah. I mean, it's a prototype. Like, I don't, you know, like this isn't the rocket that's going to Mars. This is the prototype.
And it burned down. There's no more. There's not a factory making like 10 dragon arrows.
I'm sure he, you know, Cersei.
I'm sure his children are working.
All the little kids that are in his employ that he pays apparently in plums.
Yeah. Is that what he does?
Yeah. He gives them like little treats and things. They're all these little orphans. He gives them like little, I think, prunes, like dried plums. And they're like, thanks. Yeah. I'll go slaughter a man for a plum. Like,
of all the, they murder a man.
They literally murder a man. He's like, he has a prune. Fuck you, dude. You've got gold in there.
That's true. There's a giant. They have all the Lannisters have all this gold, and Qyburn paying them in plums.
We have an excess of plums this year.
I think it's true, but it's easy. I guess it shows how easy it is to dupe a child into doing something lesson is like kids. You can get a kid to do whatever you want.
Oh, you can get a kid to do anything.
If you tell a kid that want a kid to do a chore, but you want to make it into a contest, you're just like, I want to see how fast you can run upstairs and make your bed. And then they'll do it because they're like, oh, I want to beat 60 seconds or something.
Winning
like that
is the best thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know he feeds them. He pays them in plums.
At one point, he's like, ooh, here are some plums. And here's the thing, like, if you're an orphan, it is the thing for kids.
Sure.
It's like, what's money going to do for me? I can't, someone's going to beat me up and take this money, but a plum.
Yeah, that's true. Nobody would beat me up for a plum.
People will be like, congratulations. Yeah. Guess what? Plums are like the 10th worst fruit.
That'd be the most embarrassing thing to get beaten up over. Like a bully at school beat me up and took my plums.
Plums are the worst stone fruit. Yeah. Like, I don't care about a plum. A peach? I might kick your ass for a really good peach.
Yeah.
But a plum?
Got my plum stolen.
Yeah. Have a plum.
I did it. That's the funniest detail in the entirety of Game of Thrones. I did not know.
I think he gives a kid a plum like once. He gives a kid a plum one time. But I do remember thinking at the time, like, a plum? We're in the castle and you're giving me a plum?
These kids are getting ripped off.
These kids are getting ripped off. This man has defeated death and he's giving you a fruit? Like, get out of here.
That's true. He literally brought a man back from the dead.
To life.
And he's just
Yeah. Give me that potion in case I die. Fuck your plum, dude. But kids are dumb. And I think that's the main message of Game of Thrones, is that kids are pretty dumb.
Kids are true.
That's the overarching message of the show. Okay, so so season 7, we're all set. Danny and John have sex. He has sex with his aunt.
We didn't even talk about it
because it's pretty self-explanatory. They have, you know, you've known it's coming for a long time.
Yeah.
Clearly they were setting up these two powerful hot people to have sex. They do. It's his aunt. Whatever. They'll unravel that next season.
Yeah.
I mean, of all the gross things that happen in the show, that's the least gross.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Pretty cool for John. Okay. So Sal, thanks so much for chatting with me about season 7.
Yeah, no problem.
Every hand has to die because it's Game of Thrones and hands don't last very long. So, but I'm merciful. So I'll let you pick your death. Any kind of Game of Thrones death.
Oh, any kind of Game of Thrones death.
So we've had wildfire, dragon fire, a beheading.
I mean, since we were talking about it, I would choose two of the ones we've talked about: being baked into a pie,
or
being murdered by a little horde of children being paid in plums. Like, if I knew that they were, if they said to me, like, as I, with my gasp, last gasp, with my death, and I was like, why are you doing this? And they were like, because a creepy man gave me a plum.
For a plum.
I would, yes.
For a plum, sir. Yeah. And then the last.
That would be the worst.
Because I'm so merciful, I'll give you both. kids are going to murder you for plums and then bake you into a pie. Here's my question, though. Sweet pie or savory pie?
A sweet pie made with plums. Why are you doing this?
For a plum, sir.
Well, the Maesters need me to check on my wildfire cache, so we gotta conclude season 7 here. Thanks for listening, and we hope that you are ready for season 8. We hope we've done our job well. Stay subscribed, though, because now we're gonna be releasing an episode every week, recapping the previous night's show. Yeah, we're sticking around for season 8, so keep downloading and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.